One of you here today, as we come together to worship God, I'm going to say something about, you know, Larry mentioned that we had a little issue with water here this week. I would say it was a big issue with water this week. Friday, we discovered, Larry and I discovered that the baptistry had flooded. I have pictures, but my feet were wet and I was wearing shoes. And so over here, but it was a good thing to be able to have some people come out and fix that and get it to where we can come back together. But it is kind of funny, the idea if your belongings aren't where they're supposed to be, how often do we have our own seats? It's like, this is my seat. No. Feel free to move around at some point in time. Find your stuff and then make that your seat for a while. That's what I would suggest. If you're visiting with us, we are happy that you are here. And appreciate your presence and would ask that if you would come back and visit with us again, we would love to have you here. Tonight at 5:00, we're going to be turning our attention once again back to the book of Revelation. And as I was thinking about tonight's lesson, you know, a lot of cities have nicknames. Midland, the tall city. Yeah, and then Chicago, the Windy City, which I was in Chicago once in the winter, and it is incredibly cold when that wind hits you. It's legitimately a windy city. Fresno is like the gateway to the Sierras. Everyone has a nickname for a city. As Christians, how would you like to live in a city that had the nickname, "This is where Satan dwells"? We're going to talk about that place tonight. I don't know if I would want to be there, and yet there were Christians that were faithful in that place. That will be tonight at 5:00. We constantly evaluate true versus false. Let me illustrate that with a couple of things that happened to Beth and I yesterday. Yesterday, we were driving down the road, we were going somewhere, and on my phone, there was a number that came up, and I didn't recognize the number. There was no name attached to it. It was a business number, and so what I typically do with those, I just let those go to voicemail, and if it's someone I need to call back, then I'll call them back, and what it was our credit union saying that there was a fraud alert on some activity on our account, so I called them up. I said, "What's going on?" And they said, "Yeah, did you spend X number of dollars at Comet Cleaners?" I said, "Yeah, that was us. Clear it. It's all good." Why they flagged that, I don't know. Later in the day, last night, Beth and I were laying in bed, and she gets a text, and the text is from Citibank. And it says, "There's some fraudulent activity or some questionable activity on your Citibank." And she's like, "What should we do?" I said, "Well, let me check. You know, don't click the link." We know that, right? By the way, if you don't know that, learn it. Don't click the link. And so I open up my iPad and I go to check out Citibank. And as I'm typing in Citibank, and I'm like, "Wait a second. We don't even have a Citibank card." So that's not us. Has that kind of stuff happened to you where you get these fraudulent things? You know, we evaluate, wisdom says we need to evaluate what's true, real, and authentic versus that which is not. And what we do on a day-to-day basis is something that people around us also do, not only in regards to secular things, but they evaluate us in regards to spiritual things. People look at us and they see, are you practicing something you genuinely believe? Are you talking about something you genuinely believe? Because when we do that, when we genuinely profess a belief in Christ, something important to us, that's something that engenders respect. It helps people to trust. Authenticity in life matters. As we, as Christians, seek to share Christ to this world, The world needs to see that it matters to us. And so when we look at Matthew chapter 5 and the Sermon on the Mount, we started last week talking about one of the statements that Jesus makes in verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. The whole point of that is you need to be authentic, you need to be real, you need to be effective. And if you're not authentic, then you're not going to be effective. This morning, as we look at the second part of that, the idea of you are the light of the world. Again, what Jesus is calling us to is into a revival of authenticity. That is more than just something that we pass by, we shrug our shoulders, we say, yeah, it's okay. But rather that our faith is what our life is. It defines us. So we have to ask the question, does my word, the things that I say, and the things that I do those harmonize with what I profess as a Christian? In Matthew chapter 5 and at verse 13, Jesus says, notice, or beginning, we'll begin in verse 14, he says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. In order people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give to your glory to your Father who is in heaven. What does Jesus mean by this statement? I think we probably understand, but let's look a little bit deeper into this statement. First of all, by noticing the phrase, you are the light of the world. There's a certain sense that Jesus makes in that statement. There's some emphatic point that he wants to draw our attention to. When he says you, the pronoun there is one that emphasizes you and you alone. It's not just you, but it's you and no one else. Now think about who it is that Jesus is talking to. Jesus is talking to people, most likely, that the world views as unimportant. The world viewed as insignificant. And what Jesus points out to them is you and you alone are the light. You and you alone are significant in this work. So here's the bottom line. If we as Christians are not the light, who will be? If we as Christians are not the salt of the earth, then who will be? Can we expect those that are outside of Christ to be the light, to shine God to the world, to shine Christ to the world? Can we say, you know, I'm not going to do it, but someone else will? Can we really expect a sinful world to profess a morality that is of God? Can we expect a sinful world to preach a gospel that redeems from sin? Can we expect a sinful world to hold up godly morals and values? And we all know that that's not the case. The reality is that what our society professes is contrary to God. It professes a morals and a values of self. It professes something that leads further and further into sin. So again, what Jesus says is, you are the light of the world, you and you alone. But let's go from the world to your world. Because it's easy, isn't it, when we say, you are the light of the world. Okay, I'm a light in the midst of the world. Here I am. That's great. But you and you alone are the light in your world, in your place, where you live. How many Christians live in your neighborhood? Not quote-unquote Christians, but New Testament Christians. How many New Testament Christians work in your business? How many New Testament Christians go to your school? What's the mean? If there's no other Christians on my street, then I and I alone in the light of the world. I'm the only thing that stands between the people around me and condemnation. If I walk into a store and see people, I'm the light, me and me alone. Walk into my business, me alone. If I am not light, now who's going to do it? I think the sad thing is that when Christians are not light, the world gets darker and darker and darker. And what are we seeing? The world getting darker and darker and darker. Why? Because we have been content to let our light shine under the basket of a church auditorium. We're content to let it shine here, but outside, maybe it'd be different. Jesus says, you and you alone are the light of the world. And what helps me to then take that responsibility and act upon it is understanding the state of the world. In John chapter 8 and verse 12, Jesus spoke to them and said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Notice the implication. Jesus says, I'm the light, and if you follow me, you won't walk in darkness. If you don't follow me, you will continue to walk in darkness. Jesus came to be light. Why? Because the world was dark. And the world continues to be dark. Now, oftentimes what we use the idea of darkness as a metaphor, don't we? It's a metaphor for ignorance, lack of knowledge. We talk about the dark ages, things of that nature. Is that what Jesus is talking about when we talk about, or what I'm talking about when I say that the world is in darkness? No, not at all. I mean, our level of knowledge and science and ability because of the grace of God has excelled tremendously. I mean, you realize that we're sending people, this will happen this way, sending people, civilians, quote unquote, into space. How remarkable is that? The things that we have, you know, where you watch some of the movies of the space program and things like that. You know, computers that fill the whole room, and we have computers that fit in our pocket. And I saw this commercial. I don't know how this works, but the lady's driving a brand new Cadillac and she's able to put on cruise control and just let it drive itself. It's crazy what we see. We're not talking about intellect and knowledge and achievement because we live in a world that's pretty incredible. But with all the cultural advancements, we're missing the most basic problem and its solution. What is that? The problem of sin. Because it doesn't matter what the cultural advancements may be, none of those things can address the problem of sin. In John chapter 12 and verse 35, Jesus said to them, the light is among you for a little while longer. Walk while you have light, lest darkness overtakes you. The one who walks in the darkness does not know where he's going. Jesus says the one that's in doesn't know where he's going. And that's the reality of it, because if we did understand where we were going, then we would not dwell in sin. The problem is we don't understand sin. That's why we're in darkness. We don't understand how to deal with sin. We don't understand how to get rid of sin. The only way to do that is by the light of Christ. Colossians chapter 1 verse 13, Jesus has delivered us from the domain of darkness into his kingdom. Jesus is the light. He's the source of the light. He's the light of the world. John chapter 12, the light is among you for a little while longer. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you. Little while longer you have the light. While you have the light, Jesus says, I'm the light, but I'm just here for a little while. Where's he going? Acts chapter 1, he ascends back to heaven. Now that Jesus is in heaven, Christians are what? We are to be the light. But the light does not emanate from within us. And of us, it emanates from Christ. We are the light of Christ that reflects Christ as the moon reflects the light of the sun. The light does not come from our own strength, it comes from Christ. That's why it's important that we be the light. No one else will be. We're the only light that remains. So if we're not going to do it, who's going to do it? Well, let's ask the question, why should I do it? Why should I be a light? What's the benefit of light? Light, first of all, reveals. It reveals something. Psalm 119, verse 105, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Light reveals something. What does light reveal? When you're a light, when you live as Christ wants you to live in a world that's dark, what's that reveal? It reveals to the world that you understand a better way. That you understand the way of sin is not the way to go. Why'd you turn to Christ in the first place? Because you recognize his way was the better way. And so when you live that way, you're saying, yes, I think Christ's way is better. What's the message when we don't live as Christ wants us to live? What we're saying is, that way isn't what we should do. Christianity must be visible. We're going to come back to a concept in that in a little bit. But Christianity must be visible. Someone said, there's no such thing as a secret disciple. For either secrecy destroys the disciple, or the disciple destroys the secrecy. Have we destroyed the secrecy? Christianity must shine, but how do we do that? How do we not do it? How do we do it? Every time, you interact with someone, the way you treat the people around you in the grocery store. Now, I joked about a while ago, you get in the line that has 10 items and you're counting the baskets and you're getting, upset because the person in front of you has 20 things, they're only supposed to have 10. You get upset. How do you treat that person? Or maybe you go through a checkout line and the person is just swamped, busy. Have you ever been in a situation where the person in front of you is angry and they're upset with whoever's helping them? And how do you respond when you get up there? You're next in line. You don't know what's going on in that person's life, what they're dealing with. How do we treat them? How do you treat people at work? How do you treat people when you drive? When you talk? So the reality is, when we talk about Christians must shine, there are limitless ways that we must shine. Every aspect of our life shines in one way or another. It's a question of, do we shine where people can see it, or do we shine under a bushel? Light reveals. The way you live tells people you believe the way of Jesus is better. But light also guides. You ever been on a dark road without lights? Have you ever been in that kind of situation? When you are, you realize the value of light. As I get older, I'm noticing more and more. See, up till about 5 years ago, I didn't wear glasses. And then 3 years ago, he said, you need progressive lenses. And I'm like, how fast is this accelerating? But what I've noticed now, you go down a road that you don't know, that's dark, and it's tough to navigate that. It's tough to navigate that. Not having light makes the way difficult. Our purpose is to make the way clear. So what the world needs is not difficulty. What the world needs is role models. What the world needs are leaders. What the world needs are guides. What the world needs are people with courage and compassion to say, you know, there's a better way. This life with everything that comes with it, if this was it, it would be rough. There's a better way. And show them that way in our life. Because light warns. This is the judgment, John 3:19. Light has come into the world. People love darkness rather than light because their works were evil. This is the judgment. I like the passage in Ezekiel that calls us watchmen, or it called Ezekiel a watchman. God tells Ezekiel, whenever you hear a word from my mouth, you tell people. You warn them. And if there's a danger coming, and you know there's a danger coming, and you don't warn them, I'm going to hold you accountable. How many of us would be held accountable because we see judgment? We see what God is going to do, and yet we don't warn. But what we do is we warn. We console. It's okay, the decisions that you make. We're told in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9 and verse 10 that there's several things that God does not approve of, will not allow into his kingdom. You can look at that passage in the list, and there's more than that. It might not be easy, but we got to warn. God has a plan for families. We got to warn that that plan is not what men are doing, but it is a better way. We got to warn that this life is not all there is. There's something better coming, but there's a way to that place that's better. What do? We need to warn. And when we warn and show light, that light that they see will give life. You were dead in trespasses and sins, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 1. But in verse 4, but God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive. Where sin brings death, Jesus brings life. In John chapter 1, and that life was the light of men. It's important to shine. Not so people can see me, so they can see the one that can save them. So how do we shine? Shine this way. Shine brightly. Sometimes we want to just shine with the smallest light. I know lights have changed quite a bit, but the little lights on the keychains, you know, hardly any battery life, very little light. I remember having one, it was on the keychain, it was a little plastic thing, and it had this little light at the end, and it was so you could see the lock on your door at night. And that light was absolutely worthless. Too much of us, our time is trying to shine that kind of light when we need to be bright. Bright for Christ. Shining the big light. Because why? Because we're a chosen people. We're a royal priesthood, a holy nation. And he has designed it that we proclaim his marvelous light. Don't hide it. Shine continuously. Why? Because you never know. You never know who's watching. How many of you are here today because a person shined a light? I'm here as a Christian today because one person made a decision to shine a light and affected my whole life. What if they didn't shine? What if at that point that individual said, you know, I'm just too busy to think about it. I'm too occupied to take the time. wherever, whenever, shine. But what happens to a light that shines all the time? You ever walk out back before cars, you know, had the automatic lights that shut off? You ever walk out and notice that you left the lights on all night, maybe? What happens? A lot of times you couldn't start the car. Battery's dead. What happens when we shine all the time? Batteries get weaker and weaker. This is why it's so important for us as Christians to come together and to assemble and to praise God and worship, to study His Word and grow. Because in worshiping God and being with each other, we build each other up. That's why the Hebrew writer says, let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good works. Stir up that energy and that power to go out and do what He wants us to do. It's so easy to be affected by things that are around us. And we also need to shine carefully. Out in California, the church building that was out there is in the middle of a neighborhood, houses on all three sides. And we had these big parking lot lights that were probably 20 feet up in the air, and our neighbors were notorious for being upset about the lights, because the lights would shine right in their bedroom. And there was one time where we had some vandalism at the church building. And so as a result of that, we kept the lights on in the parking lot for a while. And so we got phone calls, you get on the voicemail, hey, your lights are on. It's like, sorry. But you ever had that? You know, where you have a bright light coming into your bedroom window, you're trying to sleep. It's aggravating. It's annoying. Sometimes we can shine a light, but what we do is we take the light and you just shine it right in someone's face. And it's just hurtful. You know, you're driving around now and the cars with the ultra white bright lights. It's painful. As Christians, we're to shine the light, but let's be careful how we hurt people. Maybe be a little bit more helpful than hurtful. Compassionate than condemning. We need to be careful. And we also need to be careful about the focus. Yeah, we're to shine our light so all can see, but remember, the focus isn't on me. Jesus addresses that in chapter 6 of Matthew when He says they give alms to be seen of men, they pray to be seen of men, and they fast to be seen of men. What's our focus? What's our purpose? That brings us to the last point, verse 16. You're to shine to bring glory to God. That's the reason we're here. I know it's a simplistic statement, but you're here for a reason. You realize that? I know you're here for a reason, because if you weren't here for a reason, you wouldn't be here, right? You're here. God has a purpose that He wants you to achieve. What is that purpose? To glorify Him. Jesus says in verse 16, let your light shine before men that they may see your good works and do what? Glorify God. So do this with me. At the beginning of every day, ask, how can I glorify God today? What can I do to glorify Him? In every activity, ask, how can I best glorify Him in this? And at the close of the day, when you lay your head on your pillow, pray to God, God, how did I glorify You? And Lord, if I failed to glorify You when I should, please forgive me. It's about glorifying Him. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 31, whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Whatever you eat or drink. I mean, is there any other task as menial as that? And he says, even when you do that, glorify God. Whatever we do. Why? Because you and you alone are the salt of the earth. You and you alone are the light of the world. Jesus is the hope for society, for people. But that hope rests whether or not you're shining your light. What we need to do is master our influence. How bright are you shining? Jesus is the light of the world. He came to this world as a light. The world is dark. He came as a light to bring life. The only way we can have life is in Him. But if you're not in Him, then you don't have the life. And so we come to a close this morning, and I ask you to look at your life. If you need to make a response to the gospel to be obedient, today's the day. I was thinking about the baptistry and the fact that there's no water in the baptistry and things like that. And here's what I want you to know. If you're not a Christian and want to become a Christian, we'll find water. It's that important. We'll find a bathtub, we'll find a pool, we'll find something. There's water. And I hope you see that the emphasis of that shows how important the biblical mode of baptism is, that is being immersed. We'll find it. If you need to make a decision to obey Christ, don't wait and say, well, there wasn't water. We can do it. And if you're a Christian, you haven't been living as a good light or salt, don't say to yourself, well, you know, I'll make the change next week. Don't allow something to stop you. Because that's what Satan wants to do. To keep you from being what God desires you to be. So what do you need to do? Whatever your need is, we stand ready to help. We want to help. What you need to do is respond. If you need to obey the gospel, please respond. If you need to repent of something in your life before God, then go to Him. Seek Him. If you need prayers, we'll pray for you. Whatever your need is, why not come forward this morning while we stand and sing?